Why do angry words come out of your mouth? Or why do words of peace, healing words, come out of your mouth? Why do you talk too much? Or why do you say too little? Our words are a gauge of what is inside us, aren't they? You know, when the Pharisees accused Jesus of casting out demons by the prince of demons, by Beelzebul, he said these seemingly harsh words. You brood of vipers, sons of snakes. How can you speak good when you are evil? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The good person out of his good treasure brings forth good, and the evil person out of his evil treasure brings forth evil. I tell you, Jesus continues, on the day of judgment, people will give an account for every careless word that they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. That's Jesus speaking, saying that our words are indeed a gauge, a measure of what is going on in our hearts. So when we speak angry words, that's an indication of what is in our heart. Words are also a tool. They're not only a gauge. They're also a tool, an instrument to work for good or to work for evil. To fulfill the purpose of our creation, that is to praise God, to glorify Him, or to work in opposition to the purpose of our creation. To do the works of Satan, to tear down, to deceive, to lead astray. Our mouths, our tongues, as James tells us, are thus mighty, but difficult to control. As we just read, no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. Think now. What have you said, even in the last week, that has been full of deadly poison? What have you said that hurt and cut someone else? On the other hand, what have you said that built up another person, that were words of encouragement? What have you said that were true praises to God? Our text today from Proverbs 10 and Proverbs 12 says much about the words of our mouth, both their potential for good and their potential for evil. We want the words of our mouth to be pleasing to God, as we just sang. We want God to take our lips and to fill them with messages from Him. So let's now look at these chapters in this book of godly wisdom and see what they can tell us about the words of our mouth. Last week we completed chapter 9, and in doing so we completed the prologue to Proverbs, of chapters 1 through 9. Today's text begins with the words, the Proverbs of Solomon. And this section of the book continues until the middle of chapter 22. Here, these verses seem to stand alone. It seems like Solomon is giving us a long list of proverbs that have nothing to do with each other. Almost all of these proverbs are set up with a first and a second half, part A of the verse and part B of the verse, and the two halves are in parallel of some sort. Look at chapter 10, verse 1. I'm going to read this from the NIV because that brings out the parallel a little better than the ESV. A wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish son, grief to his mother. Two halves of the verse, saying two different things, but strong parallels between them. Each part in the first half of the verse comes up again in the second half. There's a son in the first half, a son in the second half. But in the first half, the son is wise, and the second half, the son is foolish. he does something to his father or his mother in the first and the second half. And what he does is to bring joy. The wise son brings joy to his father in the first half, grief to the mother. Clear parallels, making an important point. This point being, wisdom has an impact on those who love us. That when we are wise or we are foolish, we either benefit or we hurt those who love us, those who are around us. Most proverbs in this section are like this, where one statement is made in the first half and a contrary statement is made in the second half. There are a few, and we're going to see a couple of those this morning, that restate the same point in the second half, either more strongly or with a slightly different twist to it. But most of them are these contrasting proverbs. And they do look like they stand alone. Proverbs 10:1 and 10:2 don't look like they have much to do with each other. And that's the way Proverbs has been interpreted for a long time. Just taking the verses one by one, even rearranging them, pulling all the verses that talk about the tongue out from different chapters of the book, and then saying, what does Proverbs say on the tongue? Then what does Proverbs say about fathers and sons? Then what does Proverbs say about sexuality? What does Proverbs say about money? But over the years, as scholars have learned more and more about Hebrew, ancient Hebrew literary structure, we have come to understand that Proverbs is indeed a tightly integrated book, as we discussed in the first sermon on this book some weeks ago. In this case, this particular verse, chapter 10, verse 1, is a transitional verse. We've just had all of the prologue addressed to the son, and now, in the beginning of this section of seemingly isolated Proverbs, the author is telling us, this is still to sons, this is still to draw the attention of the young, to provide the young with wisdom and instruction, and remember, you sons, what you do has an impact on others. Whether you take the road to wisdom or the road to foolishness, whether you take the path to death or the path to life, that will have an impact not only on yourself, but on all those around you. So the implication is, listen. That's been said explicitly through the prologue. Now we come to this section of the book, and the point is, listen. Listen carefully to what follows, to the riches of godly wisdom, which follow in these next 12 chapters. Well, Proverbs is carefully arranged. Verses explain each other, they temper each other. So just as in the rest of Scripture, the context of a verse is absolutely vital for understanding what it means, for interpreting it. Nevertheless, Proverbs uses literary structures that aren't apparent in our English translations frequently, and are, furthermore, are different from the way that we write in English today. And also, even though this is a tightly integrated book, many topics come up in the course of a passage as long as what we are talking about this morning. And so, it is a challenge to preach from, as I have found this last week. I hope you won't find that a challenge this morning. I hope the way I've organized it will be useful to you. We're not going to look at every verse. We're not even going to read every verse in these chapters this morning. But a major theme here is the words of our mouth. And so we're going to look at this under four headings. First of all, very briefly, on true riches, because that's foundational for what Solomon says about words. And then, words and self, words and others, and words and eternity. So true riches, very briefly, then words and self, words and others, words and eternity. true riches. Do the wicked prosper? We know many who seem to prosper, don't we? Whether those are criminals such as drug dealers who are driving the big cars and have the beautiful women around them, whether that's the immoral but legal businessman who is doing things on the side that aren't quite right, but no one can accuse him before a court. Whether it's dictators such as Saddam Hussein, before he was deposed, but for decades was in charge of his country, or whether it's smaller things that impact all of us, lying on tax returns, people who make themselves look better than they really are to try to get a promotion or to get hired into a job. We seem to benefit when we do wrong things, often. Proverbs acknowledges this. Proverbs tells us that this indeed is the case, that the wicked will prosper for a time. Look at verse 2 of chapter 10. Treasures gained by wickedness. Stop there. Solomon is telling us, right at the very beginning of this collection, that there are treasures that wickedness gains. So we're not to imagine that somehow God is going to implement His justice right now and everyone is going to get exactly what they deserve. Proverbs acknowledges that. Treasures gained by wickedness, they are there. But he goes on to say, they do not profit. But righteousness delivers from death. What's he saying? He's saying there are treasures that come to the wicked. But in the end, they're worthless. It is righteousness that delivers from death. Those treasures one gains through wickedness will not deliver you from death. Verse 3, the Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, but He thwarts the craving of the wicked. The wicked look like they have achieved riches, and thus they can satisfy their desires, their cravings. And it looks like that righteous person who didn't engage in that illegal act and thus doesn't have the money that that wicked person does have, it looks like his cravings, his desires are not being met. But what these couple of verses tell us is that God is the moral authority in the universe, and there is coming a time when He will right every wrong, where the treasures gained by wickedness will be seen for what they are, as worthless, as not lasting, and righteousness will be seen as the way to reward. Wickedness may lead to earthly riches, but not to the satisfaction of our deepest desires. The end of this section in Proverbs 10 sums this up. Verse 16, the wage of the righteous leads to life. The gain of the wicked to sin. And sin leads to death. We'll come back to this at the end when we look at words and eternity. But I wanted to get this thought in your mind as we begin to talk about benefits coming from our words and benefits coming to us from proper speech. Have this in your head, that the promise is not that all these benefits will come to us right now, but that God is a righteous judge, and He will see to it that every sin is paid for and that righteousness is rewarded. Okay, words and self. Under this, we want to look at two things. Words directed at us and words coming from us. What do words coming at us, how can they help us, and how do words coming out of us have an impact on us? So look at verse 8 of chapter 10. The wise of heart will receive commandments, but a babbling fool will come to ruin. Chapter 12 has a couple of verses that are similar, verse 1 and verse 15, the first verses in the two sections of chapter 12. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. The way of a fool, says verse 15, is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. Why do we need to listen? Why is it so important that we listen to rebuke and reproof? When we do that, what are we admitting? What are we saying about ourselves? When we listen to reproof, we're saying, I am a sinner in need of change. I cannot conquer sin in my life by my own devices. 20 years ago, I heard a sermon with this outline. Sin always deceives. Sin always destroys. Sin always is discovered. Knowing that, knowing that sin is deceitful, we are then in a position to listen when we hear words of rebuke and reproof. Have you acknowledged this? Are you inviting reproof and rebuke? Or when someone comes up to you and offers rebuke, do you respond in such a way that what you communicate is, don't ever do that to me again. I don't want to hear that. I'm not interested in that. You know, I can handle myself. You know, what these Proverbs tell us is that there are really only two choices. Either you are inviting reproof or you're stupid. One of the two, according to Proverbs 12:1. Well, one reason some of us cannot hear reproof is that we're too busy talking. You know someone who's done this? Have you done this yourself? Imagine you go to a brother and you say to him, you know, I'm concerned about you. We haven't seen you at Sunday worship for several weeks. You've missed your small group for several weeks. What's going on in your life? How can I help you? And he says, oh, I'm fine. Hey, what about Stephen Davies? You think he's going to be able to come back and retain the form he had? But Steve Smith, what a great season he's having. Look at all those catches. But Jake, I don't know, you know. He's not so accurate. How could he complete 3/4 of his passes in the preseason and miss so many now? A babbling fool. Trying to divert the conversation from his sin, like the woman at the well. Remember John chapter 4? When Jesus says to the woman at the well, you know, he says, go call your husband. And she says, oh, I don't have a husband. And he says, that's right, you speak the truth. You've had 5 husbands, and the man you're living with now is not your husband. Remember what she does? She says, oh, I see you're a prophet. Now tell me, you know, I've got this theological problem. We've been worshiping on this mountain, and you Jews have been worshiping on that other mountain in Jerusalem, and you know, they both look pretty good, they're both high, and just tell me, explain this to me. And really say, you know, don't talk about what's in my heart and in my life. I don't want to hear it. A babbling fool, trying to divert the conversation from his own sin. That's what chapter 10, verse 10 tells us. Whoever winks the eye causes trouble, but a babbling fool will come to ruin. Some cause trouble for others through concealed communication. That's winking the eye, working behind someone's back to try to bring about something to their detriment. That's bad. But the babbling fool is causing trouble for himself, and that is stupid. The babbling fool will come to ruin. When we speak like that, we are rejecting counsel. We are rejecting reproof. That's not to say every rebuke and every reproof is warranted. We have to be discerning in what we hear. But we need to be open. And we need to realize that our heart indeed is deceptive. Sin always deceives. And no rebuke is going to seem pleasant. No discipline is going to seem pleasant, as the author of Hebrews tells us. And so we need to know, when we hear something and we begin to get angry at what the person is saying to us, to say, Lord, I want to hear. I want to hear whatever is right in this rebuke. And let everything else that's not right just flow off me so I'm not reacting to it. We need to hear rebuke and reproof. That's one speech that affects us personally. But now what about our own speech? How does our speech work to our benefit or our loss? Just two verses briefly. Look at verses 13 and 14 of chapter 12. An evil man is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous escapes from trouble. From the fruit of his mouth a man is satisfied with good, and the work of a man's hand comes back to him. So your own speech works for good or evil on you. Foolish speech catches you, hurts you, ensnares you. When our kids were small, we had a tape that had a song, and I don't remember the tune of it anymore, but the lyrics were something like this. You tell one lie, it leads to another, so you tell two lies, and then, oh brother, you're in trouble up to your ears, or something like that. That you tell one lie, and then you've got to tell another lie in order to cover up that first lie, and then another lie, and another lie, and another lie, and it just keeps going and going and going. It ensnares you. It traps you. You begin to walk down one path and then you are trapped in it. But wise speech will not lead to entrapment. Wise speech enables you to escape from trouble, verse 13. And then verse 14, with the fruit of his mouth, a man is satisfied with good. When we are speaking words which are wise, they rebound to us through husbands or wives who are built up and thus are responding to us in love, children who know that their father, their mother loves them and who are responding to that leadership, thanks from people to whom we have spoken words of either wise rebuke or encouragement, or just the joy of seeing those that we have encouraged or exhorted built up and becoming more and more Christ-like. When we speak wisely, we benefit. When we hear rebuke from others, we benefit. Words are to be for the building up of ourselves. That's one important way that they work. Remember that before you open your mouth. That what you say will have an impact on you in addition to the person to whom you're speaking. Words in others. Our words that build others up come back to benefit us. Our words that hurt others come back to ensnare us. That's the point that I've just made. The impact of those words on us. But of course, such words also have a huge potential for impact, either for good or evil, on those around us, and most especially on those nearest to us in our families. I want to read chapter 10, verses 11 to 14 to you. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. Just let that sink in a little bit. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain continually flowing of life. But the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses. On the lips of him who has understanding, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him who lacks sense. The wise lay up knowledge, but the mouth of a fool brings ruin near. I'm going to work backwards through these verses. So start by looking at part A of verses 13 and 14, the first half of verse 13 and the first half of verse 14. The wise person stores up knowledge. Well, he stored that in his heart, and thus when he speaks, out of his heart comes wisdom. And that wisdom, thus, is benefiting, building up those who are around him. In contrast, the fool says nothing profitable. Quite the contrary. His speech harms others. He's bringing ruin to all those around him. He thus deserves a beating, a rod for the back of him who lacks sense. Verses 11 and 12 then elaborate on this. Again, what is in the heart? Verse 12 tells us that hatred is in the heart of the fool. Hatred is in the heart of the wicked, but love is in the heart of the righteous, the wise one. Because of the hatred in his heart, the wicked stir up strife all around them. They may talk a good game, but in the end, the work they do harms, leads to violence for those around them. Quite the contrary, the righteous, when offended in a small way, they keep that offense small. They cover it up. They keep it from becoming large. Their words, instead, are a fountain of life. That is, words that build others up, words that point to God, words that lead to blessings for all those around. Chapter 12, verses 18 and 25 make the same point with a pretty graphic image. First, verse 25, anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. The potential of a word to alleviate the pain and suffering of someone around us. Verse 18, there is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. One whose rash words are like sword thrusts. Has some of your words this week been sword thrusts? Thrust into those around you, a colleague, coworker, husband, wife, child, parent. Is the person you spoke to still bleeding from that sword thrust, still hurting? The tongue of the wise brings healing. Sometimes it's the same tongue. Sometimes the same tongue that acted like a sword can be that tongue of the wise bringing healing to that same situation. It needs to be. It needs to be. When that tongue has acted like a sword, driving into the gut and hurting so badly, that same tongue is the only tongue sometimes that can bring healing to that wound. Verses 16 and 23 of chapter 12 speak of a time to be silent and the foolishness of speaking too much. I'm going to read these from the NIV because I like the way they're translated there. A fool shows his annoyance at once, but a prudent man overlooks an insult. A prudent man keeps his knowledge to himself, but the heart of fools blurts out folly. The point is not never say anything, right? The prudent man keeps his knowledge to himself. But we have plenty of verses in these chapters that are telling us, use your words for healing, speak truth, encourage each other. So that's not the point. Your mouth can't be a fountain of life if you're not saying anything. But there is a time for silence. A time when all truth does not need to be said. A fool says, hey, it's just the truth. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying something that's true, so what's the big matter? You can't handle the truth? What's wrong with that? Speech can be true and still be cruel. Speech can be true and be unnecessary. Speech can be true and be foolish. There are many examples. Let me just make up one. Imagine you have a friend who smokes several packs of cigarettes a day. And you've gone to this friend and you've lovingly confronted this friend with the foolishness of that habit. And he's heard you and he's ignored you. And now this friend is diagnosed with lung cancer. What do you do? What do you do? First time you see him after the diagnosis. You go to him and say, God, you are so stupid. You know, that was 15 years ago I told you to stop smoking. And now you just continue to smoke and smoke and smoke. You brought this on yourself. You are so dumb. Is that what you do? Is it true? It's true. It's true. But it is foolish to say that. Now, I don't think anyone in this room would say that. But what have you done that's similar to that? What true words have you spoken to a husband, a wife, a son, a daughter, a mother, a father, a friend that really hurt, that were true, but were unnecessary? Jesus, or the Bible tells us to mourn with those who mourn and to weep with those who weep, to show compassion, to speak out of love. And speaking out of love does not mean saying everything which is true. My favorite commentator on this book, Bruce Waltke, says this: the prudent man keeps his knowledge to himself because he is not driven neurotically by pride to parade his knowledge or by rage to wreak harm. He has the self-control to wait for the right situation and the prudence to know when to speak up. In the interim, he retains an inscrutability wherein he has control over his situation. The verse does not mean that he hides his knowledge from those who seek it. Rather, he hides it from fools who have no ears to hear it or from situations where it might do harm, not bring healing. Our words are to be words of healing. We read earlier, let your words be seasoned with salt, full of grace. That's how we are to speak. Your words are instruments of God's grace. The talk, the only talk that comes out of our mouth should be talk that builds up, which gives grace to those who hear. Our words are tools to affect God's purposes in any situation. They're not a way to make us feel good by expressing our thoughts. Nor are our words a way to manipulate others, to twist them, to try to get them to do what we want them to do. Our words should be full of grace to those around us and the outflow of love for those people in our hearts. Words in self, words in others, finally words and eternity. We've seen that your words have an important impact on yourself and that your words have an important impact on others around you. The verses we look at now go into more detail about the long-term consequences of our speech. Look at chapter 12, verses 19 to 21. Truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. Deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but those who plan peace have joy. No ill befalls the righteous, but the wicked are filled with trouble. Again, look at the statements about the righteous in those three verses. They have joy, they have no ill, their lips endure forever. Whereas the wicked are liars, what are the three statements about them? They have trouble, They devise evil for others. They last but a moment. Now, once again, verse 19 implies that the liar does have his moment. It says, a lying tongue is but for a moment, yet he still has his moment. As we noted earlier, there's a time when the one lying looks like he's succeeding, but it's going to pass. It's going to pass. He seems to prosper, but as we saw under true riches, ultimately, the liar will never prosper. He will never prosper. It is only in forever, however, in eternity, when these verses are true. Truthful lips endure forever, says the proverb. And that's where the final reward is received and where the final recompense is given to the liar. Verses 2 and 22 of chapter 12 make clear the reason behind this eternal reward, and that is the Lord's favor. Let me read those to you. A good man obtains favor from the Lord, but a man of evil devices he condemns. Verse 22, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are his delight. So once again, ultimately what we are about in all of our words is acting before our Creator in a way that pleases him or displeases him. Either lives to fulfill the purpose of our creation to glorify God, or works against the purposes of our creation to bring dishonor to his name by what we say. And we need to put our focus on that horizon of eternity, because ultimately that is all that is important. Jesus told us that we will be judged for every careless word we speak. That is definite. That is in the final day. It is not yet. But nevertheless, he gave you your tongue to praise him and to build up others. Are you using your tongue that way? All of your words are before the Lord. You must give an account for every careless word. Are you pleasing the Lord with your speech? 12:28 sums this up. In the path of righteousness is life, and in its pathway there is no death. In the path of righteousness, the path of life, the path of evil and wickedness is the path to death. Chapter 12, verses 5 to 7 summarize all that we've said this morning, looking at the impact on self, the impact on others, and the impact on eternity. Chapter 12, verses 5 to 7. The thoughts of the righteous are just. The counsels of the wicked are deceitful. What's going on inside your head? Do you have just thoughts inside your head? Or do you have deceiving thoughts inside your head? Verse 6, the words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright delivers them. Verse 7, the wicked are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous will stand. Verse 6 is the impact on others. The words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright delivers. I think he's talking about those very ones that the wicked are lying in wait for. The words of the wicked are trying to harm people. The mouth of the upright is delivering those very people. And then finally, verse 7, the eternal impact. The wicked are overthrown and are no more. Hasn't happened yet, but the promise is that will happen. The house of the righteous will stand forever. That's the promise to all who speak rightly. The question then is, have you been a fool with your mouth? What's coming out of your lips these days? Those of you who've been coming to our course seminars and looking at the Changing Heart, Changing Lives videos. A few weeks ago, Paul Tripp told the story of something that happened to him as a young boy going to a family reunion. Remember the story? Family reunions were quite tense in this family. Not many believers in the family. And Paul Tripp remembers in particular an uncle who would always get drunk at family reunions and then just spout off everything that he didn't like about everyone who was there and use horrible language in doing that. And yet Paul Tripp's mother felt like they had to go, so they went, they stayed as long as they had to stay, and then she took them out right away and she put the kids in the car. And having heard all this garbage coming out of this man's mouth in his drunken state, and she buckled him in, and she got in the seat, and she started the car, but before she drove away, she turned around to them and said, "Boys, you got to remember this. Nothing ever came out of the mouth of a drunk that wasn't there already. Nothing ever came out of the mouth of a drunk that wasn't there already." I don't think we have anyone here this morning who got drunk last night. But we could also say, nothing ever came out of the mouth of someone who's tired or irritated or stressed or annoyed that was not already there in the heart. What have you said while you were stressed or annoyed or angry that came out of your heart? If curses and cutting words came out, then they were already there. If anger and irritation leads to a temporary relaxation of the guard that covers our lips, but it does not excuse what comes out at those times. The problem is deep. It's not just a surface problem. We do need to work on controlling what we say when those words start welling up from inside us. I'm not saying that's not important. That was a mistake some of us made in the early 70s, thinking that we had to be so honest with each other, we just had to say whatever our feelings were. That was wrong. We do need to work on controlling what we say, even when it's there in our heart. But even more, we need to work on changing what is in our hearts. James 3:2 tells us, if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is perfect, able also to bridle his whole body. If he doesn't stumble in what he says, it's because his heart is right. I want us to do that right now. Through this sermon, I've given you, and myself for that matter, godly reproof. And we read chapter 12, verse 1, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. You're not stupid. So, that means you love reproof. So I want you to act on it right now. I want you to act on however the Holy Spirit has been reproving you as you've heard me speak about our words. Jesus does say that we will give an account for every careless word that we speak, every harsh word, every cutting word, every angry word. But remember what the Apostle John says. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us and cleanse us of all unrighteousness. If we walk in the light, the blood of Jesus cleanses us from all sin. Maybe you've said words to someone in this room that were cutting or painful. Could be a husband, wife, a child, could be a fellow member, could be someone else in the body. We've seen words can cut and harm, and we've seen that words can heal. In a moment, I'm going to give you an opportunity to go to that person right now. Right now. And everyone here is giving everyone else permission to do that for them. And also everyone here is giving everyone else permission to climb over them if they need to get to where they're going to go. So don't feel like, oh, it would be awkward There are people here. There are legs there. There are books here. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Just be willing to go in a minute. They want you to do that. Everyone here wants everyone here to do that, to speak words of confession and forgiveness to each other. When you speak, confess your sin. Don't excuse what you did. Don't bring up extenuating circumstances. Don't blame the other person. Just confess. Confess what you did wrong. If they have something they did wrong, they can speak that to you. You wait for them to do that. But you just speak. Maybe the confession you need to make is someone not in this room. Pray about that right now. And make that confession in your heart. In a moment, we're going to come together to the Lord's table. I want us to do that with hearts that are open and free before God, with clear consciences before Him, so that there's no barrier there whatsoever. So take this time to speak to each other. If you're not speaking to someone else, pray. Pray for yourself and pray for the others in this room who are doing that. And I'm going to call us back together before the table in just a few minutes, and we'll have a time that we can pray out loud corporately. But now take this time to speak to each other words of grace.